What is the significance of shooting in black and white?
Oh, that's just a me. That's just a me preference. Because I grew up, like, I learned under black and white, like shooting on black and white film and everything. So I it's just like an aesthetic thing for me. Like, I find that cool. And plus, you know, like, I just find it like cool looking. Like it's really, there's like really no thought process. And it was just an experiment, like for social media to be like, all right, yeah, let me try making everything I work on in black and white, see how that looks and everything. And ever since it's been sort of a calling card for me.
Yeah. Do you think kind of subconsciously though that, you know, based on whatever the subject is, whoever the subject is or whatever the context is surrounding the photo, that the black and white kind of tells that story a little more?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what it has been, like every story I've been telling, and it's like it's matched with black and white, right? Whether, you know, I'm making portraits of somebody or I'm shooting a sporting event or I'm documenting something. It's always like it, like it's raised that level of importance, you know, like again, with the protests. Because I shot in black and white, those images are probably going to be timeless. There's like no, like, because with color as opposed to black and white, I feel like color puts a date on things. Because the way, like, when you understand digital photography, and you see how like color's transforming with each camera throughout time, and like between film and it being on a chip, you see how color transforms throughout time. So there's a color palette that's like dated to like 1980. There's a color palette that's dated to 1990. Whereas we look at black and white, there's no time. Mm-hmm. It's like an image I photographed today could have been photographed in 1990. Mm. You know, I feel like there's no time when it comes to black and white. So like I give my pictures a level of immortality as opposed to, like I said, with color, because of the technology with photography, how it's changing. When we're going from shooting on a roll film to shooting on a memory card, colors change over years. Like today's blues are not the blues of 1960s, or the reds are not the same reds as a 1990. You know, like even when you look at sitcoms, when you look at shows, how they're shot today as opposed to the 90s, right? Notice they don't have the same color palette.
Yeah.
Like we look at Martin, right? And you take today's sitcom. Aesthetically, in terms of color and feel, they have different dates on, you know?
Yeah.
With black and white, like I said, it really don't. Like any photo from today could have been some black and white could have been shot 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Or 20 years ago.
Unless like in color, you know, at least unless like in color, as far as like film and television goes, it's like reproduced in like modern, you know, technology, then it looks more current. Yeah, I understand that completely because I don't, you know, because I'm not a photographer. I don't have that. I didn't have the language to even say what you're saying, but now it actually makes complete sense because you're, you know,
right.
You're,
like if you're even using when that you look at music video, even when you look at music videos today, that same color palette that most music videos are shot with today, it's not the same sort of color palette and feel of like the 1970s, 1980s, mm-hmm. and 1990s. It's all like we. You know, like with color, we live in a day and age where the blues are like more bluer than ever,
mm-hmm.
or the reds are more redder than ever, or, you know, these mixed color, there's a certain level of richness as opposed to like when you look in the past and those colors, although they were rich, but they were like, the colors don't feel the same then as today. So that's why it makes like the color palette and photography different, you know, like where, all right, like when you look at the past, those colors feel away as opposed to now where, like, all right, in the past, the colors were warmer.
Yeah.
Today, the colors are not necessarily warm. They're brighter. Necessarily colder.
Yeah.
The brighter, colder, you know, you like there's a certain level of coolness, like in terms of like feel, like you don't like certain, whereas with black and white photography, the same reaction you got in the '70s with a particular photo, you're getting that same reaction today.
Yeah.
Like much hasn't changed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. And it makes sense when you put it like that. You know, it is such a simple question, but, you know, so much could come from that.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your mentality like going into these shoots? Or, you know, yeah, what is the mentality like going into these shoots or just in general before you take pictures at events or, you know, uprisings or protests?
Oh, man, it all depends on the shoot. I always try to walk away with one good picture at the end of the day. Yeah. I know I walk away with a lot, but I'm like, yo, if I get just one solid frame that tells the kind of story that I needed to tell, then I'm good for the day, you know? Now, I'll break this down too. When it comes to my personal projects, I'm always looking at what kind of story I want to tell, what kind of message I want to get out there, how am I portraying the particular story or the particular person. When I'm working with people, I treat it more as a collaboration. I'll get on the phone with somebody and be like, hey, if I'm doing a portrait shoot of them, if I can get to them, I'll be like, hey, whether it's through them or through, like, if I got to talk to middlemen or whatever, I'm like, hey, what are their likes? What are their dislikes? What are their inspirations? What do they want themselves to look like in the image? What is their message they're trying to convey? And then I'll, you know, when I get that, and then I'll put my own two cents in, and then we figure out what's the best route so I can properly represent them in the pictures. Because, all right, like, for example, with portraiture, I feel like portraiture is a celebration of people, right? Mm. Like, you're taking the best of themselves and you're putting it into a package that celebrates who they are or highlights who they are as an individual, right? So that part is a collaborative part. That's not a me. It's all about me. I'm trying to say something. It's like, the person I'm photographing and me come together.
Yeah.
Figure out, I make it about who I'm photographing. I make it less about me, totally less about me, and more about, all right, who I'm photographing.
Yeah.
When it comes to sporting events, I think about what's going to be the best way to tell the story. What's going to be the best angle? What's going to be the best look? What should I be focusing on?
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's a tiny bit about me, and it's more so about who I'm photographing. Same thing with other, with when I'm photographing socio-political things, I'm taking myself out of it, and I'm like, how can I best tell this story about this particular person or this particular event or this particular thing? I'm all like, with me, I'm always taking myself out of it as far as like, where are we trying to land with this? What am I trying to say? What am I trying to say as far as representing who I'm photographing? Through them, what should I be saying? So, and I take that across the board in everything I'm done, from, like I said, from photographing portraiture all the way down to something as simple as photographing my communities. Like, what is their story?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and that's like, when I think selfishly like that, like, you know, like, the only thing selfishly I worry about is like, yes, that, like, all right,
yeah,
how
yeah.
can I make this image look cool? Like, all right, do I put this, what kind of, you know, what kind of like, what kind of lenses do I use? What kind of, you know, lights do I use? Whatever. That's the selfish part of me, but the, which is like the cosmetic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But where the selfless part comes to me is, all right, how do I best represent that person in my body of work?
Yeah. Okay. Do you prefer candid photography more or photo shoots?
It depends. It depends, really. I'm on both ends at this point. Before, in my career, I was always about candid.
Yeah.
Like, early career, I was like, you know, I'll be a fly on the wall and see what's going on. Nowadays, I'm on both equal parts where it's like, all right, I may be cool about candid, but it'd be dope to get, like, a portrait of this person or that person. It depends on, like, what I'm feeling. So, yeah, I'm on equal footing with both candid and, like, actually, you know, doing like portrait shoots and stuff.
Yeah. Would you call yourself a photojournalist?
If you would ask me that question a couple of years ago, sure. Now, no. And here's, you know what? As a matter of fact, no. You know why I say I'm not a photojournalist? Because I'm not down the middle. I'm very biased.
Yeah, yeah.
I like anybody else a bullshit. Yeah, I'm not a photojournalist. I'm way too biased on shit.
Yeah.
Like, if I feel a way about something, I'm gonna speak on it. I'm gonna put my opinion on it. Like, now, granted, I can report on things that's around me, but that's coming from like, I'm gonna be biased about what's around me. Like, let's say like, if the George Floyd thing, I was in Minneapolis at that time and I had photographed that, whatever, or I have seen the uprisings. I would not be able to speak on that as a unbiased photojournalist. I'd be like, look, I'm with the people. Cause I feel things. I have a lot of emotions. I'm like,
empathetic. It's
hard for me to be. Yeah. I'm empathetic to shit. I'm like, it's hard for me. Like, when it comes to, like, when it comes to certain things, I'm biased on. I'm like, there's like no, like, the only thing I'm down the middle on is shit like paying the bills or or figuring out what time I need to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Or, you know, shit like that. But when it comes to, like, making this art, no, I'm not down the middle. If I feel a certain way, like, I'm gonna let people know, like, yo, look, this happened, but I feel like, but this is my take on it, you know? That's why I don't get a whole lot of assignments from the New York Times, because I'm like, I'm way too biased. And if I get sent out to do, like, and if I get sent, like, okay, and this is when I knew, I had to stop shooting for the New York Times. When the protest came and they had to run while I was shooting the first day of uprisings, that first week of uprisings in my neighborhood, and they asked me to cover it for them. They had to look through my social media. They had to look through my Instagram account, and they saw, like, I was saying fuck the police on my Instagram account all throughout. And it was like, hey, you can't do this and that. You can't say that. And I'm like, why not? And they like, well, you represent us and this, that, and third, and that, and that. You know, I just gave them, like, all right, whatever. But in my head, I'm like, that's not going to stop me from speaking my mind. Like, this is how I feel. Like, I'm documenting what the fuck is going on. We all, you know, black people universally feel this way. Like, that's not going to, like, I'm not going to not be biased about what the hell is going on. And that's why, like, consciously, I'm like, all right, yo, I got to stop shooting for the New York Times, because I just got too much to say, and I feel like I'm way too biased. I got empathy. I got way too many emotions and thoughts about things. And yeah, so I call myself a photographer, but I wouldn't call myself a photojournalist.
Yeah.
Because a journalist has to be, they have to be unbiased in their reporting. They have to be unbiased in everything. They have to be down the middle with everything. And, you know, the way just with everything about black people, like, I love my people, so I couldn't report. I couldn't necessarily use my art to report on things down the middle. Like, there's just way too many. There's just way too much that goes on for me to do that.
Yeah. Do you feel like it's less creative if you're down the middle?
Yes. Yes. The reason why I say it's less creative because you have to stick to it. You have to stick to the script, so to speak. You have to, like, you can't make a particular photo. You can't make a particular photo feel things. You just have to photograph it as it is, how it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's really not much you can change about it. And there's not many, there's, you know, again, there's that you have to look at it from a, you can't have an opinion.
Yeah.
And my lens and how I photograph things and the things I focus on, it has an opinion, it has thoughts, it has intention, it has motive. So.
Yeah. Yeah. On localhoops.com, you spoke about your relationship with basketball and what made the game so special as a kid who grew up in Bed-Stuy in East New York. What about the environment of the game, specifically from street ball perspective, encouraged you to document it through photography and you know, maybe not play the game competitively?
Right. So the one thing with me, what makes it so special is the community. Like, it's like when you look at street ball, there's a community element where everybody's connected, from the audience to the players to the coaches to referees to scorekeepers. Everybody's related. Everybody, there's a relationship going on. There's a sense of community that's going on, because everybody comes, galvanizes on a hot day to come watch there, to come watch these guys perform, do amazing things on the basketball court. And these guys that are on the court, they're the local heroes, as opposed to always having to turn on the TV and you see guys that's never been in your community. You see guys that never came outside and interacted with people, that will never do that again. You know, it's different when you're watching TV, but then you go and you're interacting with these same guys who do what they do on TV, but you can touch them, you can reach them, you can talk to them, you can build with them. There's that's always been my main thing, is like, street ball provides community. Like,
yeah,
it ain't just, it's not just like the audience behind the barricades watching the event. It's, yo, I grew up with him, to see him hoop on these streets and drop 40. I grew up with him. I went to school with him. We shared milk together. We stuffed people in lockers together. We did like that. We stole together. We grew up together. You know, like that constant theme of community, that's always been special. And it, you know, like when I, to this day, yeah, like I get big clients from Nike and Jordan, but nothing beats me taking my camera and going out to these different street ball games and seeing how, especially our people, how we all interact with each other, how we all, you know, come together to watch the, you know, the best and brightest of our community compete in this game. And for what, not like when we talk about self-community, even down to the entrepreneurial side, where there's food vendors and there's gambling and everything, everywhere you go, everywhere you look, there's the community, whether from the arms, from the security guard that's got to pat you down before you come in the game, to the street ball, to the color commentator that has the mic that's talking while the game's going on, to the food vendors. There's nothing but community happening.
Yeah.
It's more than just street ball. It's like, it's damn near like church without the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody comes and galvanizes, and, you know, they break bread with each other, and they're enjoying this game, and they're watching the folks that they grew up with perform, like, form under these bright lights, and they get to, they get to make money, they get to politic, they get to, there's so much going on in this one event that for me it makes it special, aside from like, you know, watching guys that never got a shot do things that we see professional basketball players on TV do.
Yeah. Do you think with your photography you're able to capture every little nuance of street ball or just all the sports you cover? Because I saw that you spoke about the small little things about street ball that you love outside of the game, like just the weed smoke in the air and how you spoke about, you know, getting patted down before you walk in, the food vendors and, you know, the people talking shit to the basketball players and the gambling. Like, yeah. Are you able to capture all those unique nuances?
It's still a work in progress. Like for me, like this street ball project, this has been a big personal project for me since 2012. So, you know, there's still little things I'm missing that I still got to like go. And so I'm catching them little by little, you know, every time I shoot street ball, you know, there's always something I miss. Right. Like a couple weeks ago, I pulled back and I noticed like, oh shit, there's a lot of money on this court, whether between the spectators with the Rolex, like in the hood, I've never seen, like, it's crazy. I've seen Rolexes and jewelry and knots of money. I'm like, yo, let me turn around. Let me photograph that. Cause that's something like visually I've always seen and everything, but documented, I've never like, that's one thing I've, so there's still things like, you know, I miss or like I didn't get yet. So I'm still like, cause this is a lifetime project for me. So I'm still documenting those things, you know?
Yeah. What makes New York special?
Man. Things that make New York special. Well, one, you can go to, if you're in a mood for junk food, you can go anywhere up to like 2-3 o'clock in the morning and get something to eat. That's number one. Can't necessarily do that in certain country parts of America. No one here, other thing that makes New York special, no one here holds celebrities in high regard.
Yep.
No one. I like, this shit is so fascinating. Like LeBron could walk down the street to somebody would tell him to fuck off or hurry up and walk.
Or like, they'd be like, oh, what's good, LeBron? And yeah, keep him more, like it's like very casual.
Very casual. Like, yo, what's up, LeBron? All right, move. I gotta go to work. So like, yeah, here in New York, we don't hold, like, that's the one thing I love about, we don't hold anybody. We don't hold celebrities or quote unquote important figures in high regard, right? And this one, a few places, like the people here will keep it honest with you.
Yeah.
So they like, no, ain't no filter. Ain't no, like if like say somebody wanted to commit suicide on the train, people go like, yo, get off the train tracks. I got to go to work. You do that when this train leaves.
It's terrible.
Fuck all of that. Like, come on, get the fuck out of here. Or, you know, like people have a level of honesty and transparency that you take with you throughout life. And you can get anywhere on foot. Like crazy shit. You can get anywhere on foot. Like if I wanted to today, I can walk all the way to Manhattan without a train. I like Word. Don't need an Uber, whatever. So there's that. And then,
if you was crazy.
Huh?
If you was crazy in this heat.
Yeah. I mean I could do it today, but I gotta rest and relax.
Yeah.
And then just that pride you got about being from this place. It's a gift and a curse, because at one point you're proud from being from a city that you experienced so much hardship and shit, and yet you survive. And then it's a curse, because then people will take that and they'll go challenge other people from other states, and then they'll get a reality check of like, yo, you're not in New York no more. Relax. So there's that. But and then, you know, just through every, and the other thing is like through everything that goes on in the city and that we endure from the city, we still manage to make it somehow. Like they, that quote, if you make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. I swear to God, that's the God's honest truth. Like when you think about how fucked up the city is, how crazy the city is, how people run it, how crazy they are, it's like, if it wasn't for this place, I wouldn't have been ready to deal with war in the Middle East. I wouldn't have been able, because just like here, just like in Brooklyn or the Bronx or Harlem or Queens, same shit over there, like having those street smarts to know when, all right, yo, don't go in the alley, or yo, don't kick that, or yo, he's about to pull out his weapon, you know, or you know, yo, don't go over there, don't, you know, why be on your P's and Q's, listen for shit. Like this city literally prepares you for life, because hell, even kids, you notice kids in New York, like at a certain age, they'll start going to school by themselves. They'll take the bus by themselves, they'll take the train by themselves, they'll go a lot of places by themselves. They'd be like, nah, Mom, I'm good. I don't need you to walk me here and there. Yo, just sign my permission slip, whatever. Like, I remember even growing up, my mom was worried about me a whole lot. And because even in high school, I used to be out till 12 in the morning. But that's because I was involved in school.
Yeah.
You know, I hung out with the knuckleheads too, but I had some sense to like, yo, when you start doing wild shit, yo.
Yeah.
Bug out. But again, that's like the instincts you pick up as a New Yorker. But you get that. You learn how to operate in this world being here.
Mm-hmm.
You learn how to survive out here, and that translates to the rest of the world. So
how easy would it be for you to capture these things about other cities, or do you ever want to?
That's in my grand scheme of things. Like, yeah. capturing the black rodeo that happens in Mississippi, or the lowrider culture in California, or, you know, going to Senegal and photographing Senegalese wrestling, or, you know, like I've always thought about, like in the grand scheme of things, on my bucket list to do, I want to photograph every facet of our culture, whether it's nationwide or it's abroad. I always want to find a way to capture our culture, whether, like I said, yeah, I could be in any country in Africa or any state here in the United States. I always want to capture some form of our culture. I got that big ambition. I don't know. Yeah. I'm still working on how to do that, but anywhere where there's black people and there's like there's parts of our culture in, like I really want to take the act from New York City to nationwide and, you know, globally. So that's on my bucket list to do before, you know, I check off this planet.
Yeah. Just to go back to basketball a little bit, do you see the art in the game?
Yeah. And I'll tell you where the art is. It's whether between action on the court or the tattoos or the shoes or the jewelry or the hairstyles or the people talking shit in the game. You can always find something, especially on the street ball level, like on the pro level, it's neutered. I feel like it's too manufactured. Like the guys in the NBA, they can't really express who they are.
Yeah.
Like it's too manufactured for me. Whereas when you go on a street ball level, guys could be themselves full stop. So if that means showing up with some crazy ass tattoos, a unique hairstyle, they express themselves on the court a particular way. Fans are talking shit. Guys on the court, they bring in jewelry. It's like they are themselves full stop, as opposed to the NBA, where it's all manufactured. They can say and do things and wear things a particular way. Like ever since, like after Allen Iverson, NBA was like, fuck that. Mm-hmm. All this tattoos and all these braids and all this shit. Nah, we cutting all that out. We letting you guys do that up to a part. It's like, nah, I don't like that too much. Yeah. I don't like when Allen Iverson brought his whole personality into it. And that's the thing. It's like, you should be allowed to express who you are. Like it's not just sport. It's also an art. You know? Yeah. Like there's an art in expressing yourself. Like even when you put it, when you go out during the day as just a regular person, you're like, yo, how can I color coordinate this outfit with my sneakers? Or, you know, like what do I put on? Earrings? Do I go get haircut? There's an art, especially with us as a people. There's a, like, that's one of our many gifts. Like we know how to express ourselves down to the haircut. Mm-hmm. Like how many other people can do that? Not many. Like we, like down to the fucking haircut, we expressing ourselves. So, yeah, with street ball, it's full on expression. Whereas like with the NBA, it's manicured, it's tightened up, it's corporatized, you know, and then it scares guys to like not want to take creative risks with how they present themselves, how they play, how they be who they are. So that's where the creativity is at for me. Mm-hmm.
So you shot the artwork for Lloyd Banks' last two albums, Course of the Inevitable 1 and 2. What story are you trying to tell with album artwork and shooting artists that you can't tell with sports?
Well,
or is it the same?
With photographing album artwork, I feel like it's the same. Well, not the same as sports, because with sports, you know, you're capturing everything fast. Everything's fast. Everything is like, everything's moving at 200 miles per hour. Whereas with artwork, it's like portraiture, right? You have to slow down. You have to think about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You actually have to come up with a plan.
Yeah.
To say what you want to say on a particular album cover. So, like with my time with Lloyd, with both these album covers, although we worked fast in a matter of, all right, yo, we're going to plan this 1 week, and then the next week after we plan, we're going to document, we're going to shoot it. Mm-hmm. It's always been, all right, yo, what are you thinking about this album? Like I tell you, like for the first album cover, we shot that in the beginning, like in the, we shot it during the pandemic. And the story Lloyd wanted to tell was about his relationship with his son. Mm. Like at first when through one of his engineers, he contacted me. He was like, yo, you want to shoot Lloyd Banks outcome? I was like, hell yeah. Fuck yeah. What's the plan? And at first I thought, all right, cool. I got to shoot him as a person. Let me think about getting these lights and getting all this craziness. I'm trying to get all. And then, you know, we sit down, we talk, I treat shooting those album covers like the same way I shooting portraiture. I'm, instead of making it about me, I'm like, all right, let's calm down. All right, Lloyd, what is it that you want to tell with the first album cover? What's the story you want to tell? And he was like, yo, I want to make it about my relationship with my son. And I was like, oh, okay, dope. I fucks with that heavy, because often we don't see a whole lot of album covers with displaying a relationship with black fathers and their kids. So I was like, all right, cool. I can get my socio political bag going with this album, because yo, he wants to show his relationship with his son, and in a way, he was like his son reflect him, and it's like with the title, Course of the Inevitable, with life and death. And the never-ending cycle with life and death. So him and his son represent that. So, you know, we planned it, and, you know, we planned it down to, planned out to the T. It was like, what the inspirations I pulled from it was, there's this movie called Shogun Assassin, also known as Lone Wolf and Cub. It's a Japanese manga. the relationship between, you know, a father assassin and his son, who's also trained in that, and he accepts that his father has to take revenge against the Shogun of Japan. I encourage you to check that film out if you get a chance. It's called Shogun Assassin. You'll kind of see that. So I took that inspiration and I showed Lloyd Banks that, like, we created an impromptu mood board. I was like, yo, this is what I'm feeling, how we could best display that with you and your son and everything. So that was that first album's theme.
Mm-hmm.
The second theme, we pulled, like, the theme was taking Lloyd Banks and taking, like, how can I say? I wanted to get, mutually wanted to display him as being rap's Batman.
Mm.
Right. It's crazy because when his guy showed me the mood board for this project, one of the visual influences was Batman. It was Batman, Donnie Brasco, the film Collateral with Tom Cruise, just showing the grittiness, the grime of New York, him in New York City, and, you know, making him this, you know, give him that same look and feel as Batman. And because if you look on the front of the album cover, there's him, there's a portrait of him, showing half of his face. And then when you look on the back of the album cover, there's him in front of the church, gritty picture of him in front of the church. So we wanted to show Lloyd, because over the years, Lloyd Banks has transformed from being this
super punchline rapper.
Right. Super punchline rapper, you know, glitz and glamour and, you know, superstar. So now he's grounded. He's a grittier form of himself, grittier, but, you know, still elite in a way. I imagine that like Batman, like he's been, like Lloyd Banks has been around the world. He's got his training. He's got all his experiences. And now, you know, we haven't heard from Lloyd Banks in how long? It's been a hot while, like before the course inevitable. So now that he's come back as a more defined, a more hardened vet of, you know, his hip hop, and mm-hmm. you know, everything he's gone through has made him this grittier, rugged version of self. With the second album cover, we both wanted to express that, like, wanted to both put him in that light as like, yo, this is the next evolution of Lloyd Banks.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, our influences were The Dark Knight, Donnie Brasco, and Collateral, and the grittiness,
and
the grime of New York City, and the underworld feel, and that's what we want to convey with this second album coming.
Mm-hmm. So, how does it make you feel? Because you also shot, I mean, you shot other artists. You shot Prodigy a lot when he was still here. You know, rest in peace of Prodigy. How does it make you feel that these beloved figures to yourself and the world trust you to capture their likeness and publish it to the world for, you know, for us to consume?
Man, I'm like a kid at the candy store.
Yeah.
Like, when I got to shoot Prodigy, it was my sophomore, I was in between my sophomore and junior year in college.
Mm.
And the author of Contact High, Vicky Toback, she called me one day. Because one thing I've made my bones, like one thing I'm being well known for is being Mr. Last Minute. You need a portrait shoot done, you need anything photography done, and you can supply me the resources to get it done, I'm known as Mr. Last Minute. Because I'm always prepared.
Yeah.
She called me. It was a Monday, so I never forget it. I was at home cleaning my gear. She's like, "Hey, you want to shoot Prodigy?" I was like, "Shit, you ain't gotta say less."
Yeah.
Where at? She gave me the address. I threw all my shit in my bag, carried my lights, whatever. And little did I know, until he passed away, I was the last person to shoot his portraits.
Wow.
Like that shit blew me away. I was like, and which was crazy because Prodigy was in good health, like when I saw him. So I was like, fuck, like, how the hell did that happen? But that's another topic for another day. But ever since I photographed Prodigy, it's just been like one after the other. So when I got the opportunity to photograph Lloyd, man, because I grew up with these, we all grew up with these lyricists. All grew up with their music and everything. So to get that sort of ask from him, and to the point where like we hold a good relationship, man, I hold that more so dear to me than me shooting like politicians or me shooting like pro athletes. Like that's because you don't grow up with these politicians and these athletes, but to have grown up with a guy from New York City, like Lloyd Banks, that I consider that more of a big honor than the stuff I've done for brands and stuff. Like, cause when I met Lloyd, man, with artists, sometimes, you know, we sometimes, for better or for worse, you know, we think like they're like these grandioso beings and everything. When I first met Lloyd, man, he one of us. Mm-hmm. He one of us. Like, he is so relatable. Like, him and his guy pulled up in I think it was an SUV because he got kids and everything. Yeah. And, it was literally I didn't have to go through I didn't have to go through a whole lot of people to be able to work with him. It was like, it was so smooth to the point, I was about to go home after the shoot. And he was like, you want me to drive you back to the train? I'm like, you drive me back to the train? I'm like, yo, you Lloyd Banks, you don't owe me nothing. Mm-hmm. He's like, nah, man, I'll drive you back. I was like, shit, all right, cool. Because we shot underneath, I forgot what stop in Queens. We shot underneath the LIRR bridge. And I took, like, yo, Lloyd is so super late to the point when he was driving me back to the train. He had on 10-10 wins.
Yeah.
He was talking about sports and everything. I was like, yo, this motherfucker is me 30 years down the road. Like, you can see the baby seat in the car. He got a little air freshener. He listened to 10-10 wins. We're just chopping it up, getting to know each other. And I'm like, that just made my day. I was like, yo, to know that he's so super relatable down to the T. I'm like, just like how Prodigy was. Like, when I met Prodigy and we photographed him, he was so super relatable. I was like, I even asked him, how much time do you have? He was like, man, I'm here for you. Whatever you want to do, I'm here for you. I was like, shit, all right, say less. I made as much pictures as I did of fucking Prodigy. And I was like, and I made sure, hey, thank you. Appreciate you, and everything. Same thing with Lloyd. Like, even the second shoot, I met him in the rain.
Mm.
Like, there's a big church on West 53rd Street. It's called Saint Thomas. It's like this big ass church. You'd have swore you seen it in Daredevil.
Yeah,
it was raining. I met him in the rain. He's like, yo, you want to come in the car? I was like, nah, man, I'd rather just wait out in the rain. I know you got change and everything. He literally met me on the curb. He got dressed in his car. Man, listen, super relatable. Like, I like guys like that. To the point where we drove to cemetery. I drove him I shot him in my neighborhood. Super relatable, easy to talk to. I didn't have to, like, even his manager, like, working with this core team, man, it was by far the best experience I've had with, aside from working with Prodigy. It was like, I didn't have a headache working with him as opposed to like working with fucking million-dollar athletes and fighters. Mm-hmm. And politicians and, you know, whoever. So, like, to have photographed, for the fact that I've had the honor of photographing guys like Lloyd and Prodigy and shit like that, it just put a fire in me. I'm like, yo, I want all the independent artists. So, like, I want to be one of those guys, like, help them make their album cover.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, well, I don't know if I asked you this question already. Like, what's your mentality, you know, when you going into these shoots with these artists? Because I would imagine it's different than sports.
Yeah, way different. It's all about, like, what's their story and how can I make that story come to life? And I make it super less about me. The only thing I say, like, I make about me is, like, the aesthetics.
Yeah.
But even then with the aesthetics, it's like, I always ask them, like, well, how do you see, what do you see? What from my work inspired, like, do you want to see in what I'm creating for you? I make it less about me and more about, all right, yo, what's the story you want to tell? How do you want to tell it? How do you want it to look? I make it all about them. With that, it's just like portraiture. It's more of a collaboration. It's more of a celebration of them than it is about what is it I'm trying to get off. I make it about them and them alone. And I do everything in my power to make sure at the end of the day, it still lands to what is the story that that particular artist is trying to tell, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even when I shoot concerts, like when I get the chance to shoot concerts, I have to go in that same mentality.
Yeah.
How can I show like one frame you'll see in my Instagram, there's a frame of Conway. He's got this jacket on of all the Buffalo shooting victims on his on the back of his jacket, and these lights that's coming down on him, and I was like, yo, all right, before the day's over, I have to make this particular frame. Because he showed on stage, I was like, let me shoot this frame real quick. It was so angelic. I was like, all right, out of everything I shot at Griselda, although Griselda's one of my favorite groups, this is my favorite image of Conway. I have to make that image in order to help tell that story of how he felt about the victims of the Buffalo shooting. So, again, like just like working with these artists internally and externally, I make it more about them and less about me. Cause it's not, at the end of the day, it's not about me, only on the aesthetic side.
Yeah. So what's next for Anthony Gethers?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out now. I'm still working on Street Ball. That's the big thing. I'm working on, helping to document, this tournament that Nike has out here in New York, called the New York versus New York Street Ball Tournament. So I'm helping them document that. The next leg of the tournament is next week at Tri-State, and then before that, this weekend I'm gonna go out and shoot some more street ball stuff, and then we're figuring it out as we go along, trying to come. Oh, also, there's another shoot I'm doing too. With a partner of mine, it's called Represent NYC. Me and my partner, Ahmad Harris, I met him off of Twitter, and we've been talking about, what kind of pictures our families and people around us before us took, during 80s and 90s New York, like having an ill background, and they come through with their leather coats and jewelry and the wicker chair and, creating portraits like that. So we're working on the next installment of that as well at the end of the month, bringing that back. This will be our like fourth or fifth installment of that particular project, where we're bringing the aesthetics from the 80s and 90s to to 2022
and
photographing people in that particular look and feel.
Yeah. So even though you're a photographer, it says on your website, quote, "Your vision is one that transcends the spirit of storytelling by exposing the depth of humanity," end quote. So with that being said, why do words matter to you?
Words matter to me because words can, when you look at the world, words can literally, words can do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Words can expose shadow governments.
Mm.
Words can uplift people. Words can it can shatter narratives. Words can reveal truths. Words can set things on fire. Words can do a lot. Like the power of the spoken word, the power of the written word is why the FCC likes to shut down black music, particularly hip hop.
Mm.
It's like the power of both forms of the word is why it's why certain artists get banned from radio and TV.
Yeah.
It's why, you know, journalists have to go in hiding. Mm. Like the power of the idea of writing something and speaking on something. Hell, like, that is the number one fucking piece of music in the world. Like, when you look at, like, the fact that motherfuckers can take words and put it to a particular arrangement of music.
Yeah.
And say something that can do those things, that can reveal, like, when you look at somebody like, Ross Cass. Think about Ross Cass and his song "Nature of the Threat."
Mm-hmm.
You just listen to that song and see why he'll never be a mainstream artist. When you look at that song and the themes of that song, and then you look at the world and the way the world is. You know, like like a journalist like Gary Webb exposed the CIA for smuggling drugs and selling drugs into the black community. You know what happened to him after he exposed that in his book? Got his head shot off. He got killed by the agents.
Mm.
So that's why words matter to me, because words can do so much if given the right platform, if given the right, it's hard. It's you can't take what you say for granted, because it can do, like, words can do things a machine gun can't.
Yeah.
Words do things that a simple pistol can't.
Yeah.
Words can create a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Words can make you cry. Words can make you, that's the beauty of the spoken and written word. So that's why words matter to me.
Yeah. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Thank you, Anthony Gethers, for allowing me to interview you and talk about your story and, you know, your photography and your mentality, just going into everything that you do and your intentions. Thank you for that. For everyone watching, please like, comment, and subscribe. For everybody listening, please subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere where you get your podcasts. Please comment, please rate. And Anthony Gethers, thank you once again. Words matter.
Thank you.